Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 10. Dhruva Maharaja's fight with the Yakshas. We will read from 2 until 4, as 4 is the first one which has a purport. Ilayamapi bharyayam vayo putriyam mahabala putram utkalanamanam yoshidratnam ajijanat. Translation: the greatly powerful Dhruva Maharaj had another wife named Ila, who was the daughter of the demigod Vayu. By her he begot a son named Utkala and a very beautiful daughter. Just for background, in the previous verse, Maitreya Muni explained that Dhruva Maharaj married the daughter of Prajapati Shishumara, and her name was Rami. They had two sons named Kopa and Vatsara. So here he's describing Dhruva's third and fourth children with his second wife. Text 3. Uttamas tvakritvaho. Uttamas tvakritvaho. Mrigayayam baliyasa. Hata punya janenagrao. Tunmatasya gatim gata. Dhruva Maharaj's younger brother Uttama, who was still unmarried, once went on a hunting excursion and was killed by a powerful yaksha in the Himalaya mountains. Along with him, his mother, Suruchi, also followed the path of her son. She died. And this is text 4. Dhruvo Patr Vadham Shutva.
Dhruvo Patr Vadham Shutva.
Kopa Marsha Shucharpita.
Kopa Marsha Shucharpita.
Jaitram Syandanam Asthaya.
Jaitra Syandanam Asthaya.
Gata Punya Janalayam.
Gata Punya Janalayam.
Now you please read.
Dhruvo Matru Vada Shrutva.
Dhruvo Bratar Vadham Shrutva.
Kopa Marsha Shucharpita.
Kopa Marsha Shucharpita.
Jaitra Snadya Nabasthaya.
Jaitram Syandanam Asthaya.
Gata Punya Janalayam.
Gata Punya Janalayam. Please repeat the word for word meanings. Dhruva.
Dhruva.
Dhruva Maharaj.
Dhruva Maharaj.
Bhratarvadham.
Bhratarvadham.
The killing of his brother.
The killing of his brother.
Shrutva.
Shrutva.
Hearing the news.
Hearing
the news.
Gopa.
Gopa. Anger.
Anger.
Amarsha.
Amarsha.
Vengeance.
Vengeance.
Shucha.
Shucha.
Lamentation.
Lamentation.
Urpita.
Urpita.
Being filled with.
Being filled with.
Jaitram.
Jaitram.
Victorious.
Victorious.
Syandanam. Syandanam.
Syandanam.
Chariot.
Chariot.
Asthaya.
Asthaya.
Getting on. Gata.
Gata.
Went. Punyajana. Adayam.
Adayam.
To the city of the Yakshas. Translation: when Dhruva Maharaj heard of the killing of his brother Uttama by the Yakshas in the Himalaya mountains, being overwhelmed with lamentation and anger, he got on his chariot and went out for victory over the city of the Yakshas, Alakapuri. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Dhruva Maharaja's becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, and envious of the enemies was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. Dhruva Maharaj was the king, and when his brother was unceremoniously killed, it was his duty to take revenge against the Yakshas from the Himalayas. Om Ajnana Timirantasya Yananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Udmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Te Namah. Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sakrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanditam Shcha He Krishna Karuna Sindha Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Pancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Dhruvo Bhratur Vadham Shrutva Kopa Marsha Shucharpita Jaitram Syandanam Asthaya Gata Punya Janalayam. Srila Prabhupada gives a short but powerful purport. I'll read the whole purport again. It's almost as short as the translation. Dhruva Maharaj is becoming angry, overwhelmed with grief, and envious of the enemies, was not incompatible with his position as a great devotee. It is a misunderstanding that a devotee should not be angry, envious, or overwhelmed by lamentation. Dhruva Maharaj was the king, and when his brother was unceremoniously killed, it was his duty to take revenge against the Yakshas from the Himalayas. Since this is a misunderstanding, which Srila Prabhupada included in the purport, it must be a misunderstanding that people have quite often. And it's understandable where this misunderstanding can come from. Arjuna asks, Atakena prayuktoyam papam charati purusha Anichan apivar shneya balad even niyojita O descendant of Vishnu, Krishna. By what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Krishna says, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So this misunderstanding can naturally arise. If wrath is born of lust, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world, how can a devotee have wrath? A devotee is supposed to be free from lust. Elsewhere, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that for a devotee, gold and a stone are the same. He sees with equal vision because he's free from lust. He's not trying to enjoy the things of this world, but rather, if he has a stone, he uses that stone in Krishna's service. He uses the stone maybe to build a temple. Or if he has gold, he uses the gold in Krishna's service. So being free from lust, how is it possible that Dhruva Maharaj became overwhelmed with lamentation and anger? Someone may raise this question. And that reveals a misunderstanding. Arjuna was also overwhelmed by lamentation and anger. But this is perfectly natural for a devotee. Srila Prabhupada is revealing in this purport So how do we understand it? Because the anger, the lamentation, are not on his own behalf. Bratar Vardham Shudva. This anger arose in Dhruva's heart after hearing Shudva Bratar Vardham. Bratar Vardham. That his brother had been killed. Natural feeling of a devotee is that I don't mind what happens to me, because actually this so-called me, which is composed of this body and my mind, is not really me. I don't mind what happens to my body. Nothing can touch me, the soul. All the trouble, all the anxieties that we go through in this world are related to the body and mind. So a devotee is on the platform of knowledge that I'm not the body. And when things happen to the body, when they happen to the mind, the devotee is experiencing those things as if something is just happening outside his house. It's not happening to me. It's happening out there in the external energy. My body, my mind. The body and mind are like an apartment. I'm residing in them, but that's not me. He doesn't take it personally. However, others are not in that transcendental position in this world. Therefore, they are suffering like anything. They're identified with the body, with the mind. They're seeking their identity through the body and mind, and therefore they're miserable. The devotee does not like to see anyone miserable. So he becomes overwhelmed with lamentation. He becomes overwhelmed with anger to see that this world is suffering. Everyone's miserable. Now the way that a devotee reacts, the way that a devotee expresses that lamentation that he feels, will vary depending on his varna, his ashram. A brahmana, it's said that, this is probably just a little phrase that happens in ISKCON, but I like this phrase anyway. It has a little truth to it. That a kshatriya fights a war, but a brahmana gives a seminar. It's the same, but they're serving the same purpose. They're trying to solve the problem. A kshatriya has to solve the problem by administrative means. But a brahmana doesn't get involved in that. Although he doesn't fight a war, he's still solving the problem by education. Everything is interconnected. When some senseless activity happens, people are generally confused. Why? Why did this child fall ill? Why did the child die? These kinds of situations are confusing. The mind cannot understand it. It seems to go against all the laws of the universe. That someone's life will end who barely got to experience life. Those who don't have access to Vedic knowledge are generally lost at that point. Their faith is finished when they confront this. So Vedic literature gives understanding of karma and reincarnation, so it's very clear that the person did something previously to experience this now in their baby body. They're not the body, they're the soul. So in the past, they've also done something to merit this, to earn this. That's there. So for a devotee, though, there are also experiences which provoke this confusion, this bewilderment. And that's sometimes the case with the devotee himself, or with a great devotee, like Srimati Kunti Devi. She was put through all kinds of extreme, miserable situation. What could be worse than for a mother than knowing that her own children were targeted for assassination attempts again and again by her own family members? She is a pure devotee. It's not karma. She did not commit sinful activity. So for a devotee, this is bewildering. Why would the pure devotee have to suffer? It seems senseless to the mind. Our mind cannot approach this and grasp it. It can't understand it. This phrase, this word understand is, if you look at it literally in its etymology, it means to stand underneath, to support. The mind can't support this fact with its knowledge. There's no way to fit it in the framework of the way we see the world. So we become confused. But that's because the mind falsely separates things from one another and sees everything as isolated units, when in reality, everything is interrelated. Everything is part of a bigger picture. Like a painting, if I cut out a half inch of the painting, have a square half inch, and I give the half inch of painted pigment to someone, they'll look at it and say, that doesn't make any sense. But when it's put back in its spot, then they see how it is necessary, how it applies, what's the context. And now we have a war. They say the war is over there. There's always some new war, though. There's some war going on. There's some conflict now between Pakistan and India. And in the 1960s, in America, there was war in Vietnam. There were 50,000 U.S. people were killed in that war, and many more Vietnamese were killed. So someone might not understand why is this happening? Leaving aside the issue of karma and reincarnation, which is the highest answer, even that can be viewed from a spiritual framework apart from that. That which means that it can be viewed in a larger context. The result of that Vietnam War was a massive interest in spiritual consciousness. The 1960s saw a lot of interest in Bhagavad Gita, in different traditions of spiritual knowledge, which people were seeking answers for the miseries that they were experiencing, and they were not getting answers from there. People went deeper into their own scripture. They went deeper into the Bible. People went to the different scriptures to try to find some answers. In other words, it woke people up to the madness. This is madness, what's happening. You cannot entirely divorce that madness from the spiritual awakening which came out of it. Therefore, Ishopanishad explains. The point is that the absolute truth is perfect and complete, and everything which emanates from it is also complete in and of itself. Om Purnam Adaha Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. That's the verse which I was translating just now, and that's the one I wanted. This is also, so what is the point of this verse? That everything is coming from the absolute truth, and therefore everything has a purpose, because it's real. The absolute truth is real, and everything which emanates from it must also be real. It can be misapplied. It can be, there can be madness. There can be misapplication of reality. I can take, I can eat so many things which are not actually edible. That's madness. But that doesn't mean that the thing is false or that the eating is an illusion. It's all real. It's just being misapplied. This world is real, but it's being misapplied. The anger, lamentation, and illusion which people are experiencing has utility, but it's misapplied. We're applying it to our body. We're applying it to our mind. But if we can become compassionate, if we can come to the platform of knowledge that I'm not this body, then I will be free from misery. If I can be free from the mind, I can be free from it. In that state of peace, I can see clearly the cause of misery for other people. I will lament for their misery, naturally. You don't have to try. If you're truly peaceful, you're truly happy, then you will want everyone else to be. If I'm satisfied with everything, even with the misery of others, then I'm not actually happy. My so-called happiness, always fraught with fear, because I'm drawing dualities. I'm drawing dualities that I deserve this happiness. Others do not deserve to be happy. Everyone is the child of God. Everyone deserves to be happy. So the devotee is in anxiety and lamentation to see that people are being robbed of their birthright, or they're cheating themselves out of their birthright. And ultimately, Srila Prabhupada is our founder Acharya. He's ordered us to go back home, back to Godhead. He's ordered us to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, to share it with others. These are proper applications of lamentation and anger. We should be lamenting our bodily identification. I'm thinking I'm this body still after so many years of practicing Krishna consciousness. I'm still thinking I'm this body. We can be angry that I haven't got it through my thick head that I'm the servant of the sweetest, most wonderful, transcendental cowherd boy Krishna. It's still not through my head yet. It still seems like mythology. I'm still not taking Krishna seriously. I'm seeing him like a movie for my entertainment. But I'm not understanding that Mamaivamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, that I'm actually part of Krishna. If Krishna is mythology, so am I. I made a few points and they were somewhat disjointed. I hope that there was something of use in the class. Do you have some questions?
So in this verse, they say it is okay to be have anger as long as it is not for your own purposes, as long as it's selfless. If you're angry because it's your personal reason, then that, am I understanding?
Hanuman got angry. He burned the city of Lanka. But it wasn't because he was getting revenge for them putting his tail on fire. He wasn't doing it to fight back and show how he's angry. He just saw, oh, now my tail is on fire. This will be a nice way to serve Lord Ram. It wasn't personal. It's just to please Lord Ram. A devotee isn't even happy for his own good fortune. What to speak of angry about his bad fortune? Even if he gets $1 million, he just says, oh, okay, I know how to use this for Krishna's service, or I don't know how to use this for Krishna's service, let me ask someone. But the thought of what's in it for me doesn't even cross his mind, because he already has everything for himself. Krishna has already taken care of that. He doesn't need other stuff for me. He has everything. If we don't have everything, if we feel we don't have everything, then we should become very humble and understand that I'm not yet a pure devotee. It's a barometer. This feel satisfaction, peace, knowledge are barometers that measure our devotion to Krishna. Therefore, it explains so much in Bhagavad Gita about not being angry, not being overwhelmed with lamentation, illusion, pride, envy, anger, madness, greed, lust. Because for us, envy, greed, pride, envy, illusion, celebration, love, confusion, everything is about me. And so it's saying don't be lust, greed, anger, pride, envy, illusion, or madness. But at the same time it's saying don't be overwhelmed by happiness in Bhagavad Gita. For a devotee though, his happiness is to see Krishna happy, and his anger is to see how I'm fallen. But ultimately, palena parichyate you judge a thing by its result. If the result of our happiness is that I'm remembering Krishna, very good. But if the result of my happiness is I just want pizza or something, that's That's not so spiritual. That's not what we're going for, right? And if the result of my anger is that, wow, I really have to be Krishna conscious, that's very good. And that's how Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's songs are always talking about, I'm very fallen, Patita Kinkara, I'm your fallen servant. But then, Sharanagati, I surrender unto you. I mean, it always ends in, I surrender unto you, Krishna. Not, I give up my Krishna consciousness, there is no God. There's never a song that ends like that. Okay, so Palina Parichyate, we judge a thing by its result. The result should be Krishna consciousness. Then everything means just or ends justify the mean. There are certain activities which just don't produce Krishna consciousness also. That's why we avoid illicit sex, meeting, intoxication, and gambling. These don't produce Krishna consciousness, so they're avoided. But the purpose isn't just avoiding those things. The purpose is that makes some sense. Thank you. I ask for your tolerance for the shortcomings of my presentation. You can chalk it up to my inexperience. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.